Right.
And the weapon with which you cut him gets immersed. It's covered with that love of kindness. Talk about the person who is cutting him. But water can cleanse the person.
That's nice. Great. But like we were saying last weekend, that it's really very simple, not harming yourself and others in any shape or manner, verbally, physically. That's loving kindness. By the way, there are many meditators who are intellectual. Their temperament is intellectual temperament. So they kind of don't like this love thing, you know. They find it almost boring. There are people with emotional temperament who don't like the meditation stuff. They find that boring. So I've seen problems on both sides. And in real spiritual practice, we have to balance the intellect with the practice of love or loving kindness, compassion, so that we don't stay dry. We bring some moisture into our practice. And all these elements actually, they do have intrinsic nature, meaning they actually exist, just like fire exists and water exists, you know. So it's not something that we are creating. It's not some kind of a philosophy or a logic. Loving kindness actually exists in nature. We experience it all the time. Whenever we are taking care of ourselves, having a feeling of kindness, love, we are abiding in loving kindness. It's that mental phenomenon that we are experiencing. So these are real things. And then we will talk about later on how they are part of those 52 mental elements that together constitute what we call mind.
Now, doesn't loving kindness create attachment?
Right. Actually, attachment is the masked enemy of loving kindness. It's, or some people call it near enemy of loving kindness. And that's why last time we said selfish affection, fondness, liking, attachment, infatuation, Hollywood, Bollywood, romantic kind of love, passion, all those things are masked enemies of loving kindness. It seems like loving kindness, but it is not. So attachment is not loving kindness.
So, when you talk about loving kindness, showing love.
Right.
Isn't that a form of attachment? You ask me to feel the love for everything.
It's a means to develop a sense of goodwill and welfare and to eradicate ill will. Basically, what loving kindness does is it removes the element of hatred and establishes you in non-hatred. Hatred is a root element, root unwholesome element. Hatred leads to all kinds of unwholesome states of consciousness, from simple irritation to anger to rage. That whole spectrum is rooted in the element of hatred. Now, if somebody were to ask you how I get rid of hatred, you practice loving kindness.
You don't have to attach. The way I see it is like you can show loving kindness to somebody who's having a problem, but you don't have to own the problem. You could just listen, be compassionate, sympathetic, help out, and then let it go, knowing that it's that person's still that person to deal with it, you know, you don't have to own it.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know, saying like person is my neighbor, person is my child, no. It's a person.
Person, right.
Even with your children, it's like, you know, you have to raise them, you give them the best tools you can, but the end result is theirs, you know.
Right.
Attach, you're not yours, you just move.
It's a practice in non-hatred, it's a practice in developing a sense of goodwill and welfare. It leads to purification of mind. Ultimately, what are we doing? We are meditating, we are doing everything because we want to eradicate greed, hatred and delusion. Not just delusion, by the way. Intellectuals are really, they're always thinking about eradicating delusion and establishing wisdom, right? That's the intellectual temperament. But you cannot really eradicate delusion until you eradicate greed and hatred. Greed and hatred leads to the eradication of delusion. In fact, delusion is such an element that you cannot remove it directly. Greed and hatred, when you remove them, it automatically leads to the removal of delusion. And then that leads to wisdom. So, how do you remove greed and hatred? Like I said, loving kindness establishes non-hatred. In other words, we are removing hatred. When you are thinking about goodwill and welfare of others, can hatred arise? No. Love and hate cannot coexist, right? Water and fire, they cannot coexist. So in order to minimize the probability of hatred arising, in order to minimize the potential for irritation, anger, frustration, agitation, meanness, whatever, unwholesome, if we establish ourselves in loving kindness, then there is minimal chance for that to arise. Right.
Coming back to Satish's analogy of water too, I really like that analogy. It makes me think of a river, and you can experience the majesty of the river and the beauty of the river and truly experience it without taking a swim in it, without getting wet, so to speak, but without that attachment.
Right. But attachment cannot be removed just by thinking about it. You need a real tool to be not get in the trap of attachment or personal fondness or selfish affection. What is that tool? You don't want attachment, right? The question is how? How are you going to not have attachment and still abide in the world? There are two types of spiritual aspirants. One who leaves the world and practices in the wilderness, right? The ascetic. And there is another one who lives in the world and practices. So if we want to live in the world and abide among other beings, we have to have these tools. Without loving kindness, compassion, gladness, and oneness, spiritual practice is extremely difficult. So there are two paths. One is abandoning worldly life, becoming a monk, living in the monastery. Living in the monastery or being here and now.
It's a big challenge.
How, until you use these tools, it becomes easy when you apply loving kindness, compassion, gladness, So you're abiding among other beings, and you're evolving, you know.
And the way I see it is, if somebody's being a jerk, or somebody has, like, that person has a problem anyway, so that person is suffering.
Exactly.
So then you don't really take it personally. It's just, okay, he's got emotions, I've had these emotions in the past, I have them sometimes, I'll have them in the future too, so there's nothing.
Compassion arises.
Taking it to the other extreme, if someone is inflicting physical pain or has a gun pointed to your head,
but you don't have to react to it. You have to protect yourself. You don't have to keep the person for it.
Exactly. And that can happen only when compassion arises. Only when, literally. Unless you see other person as suffering, you cannot avoid anger or fear towards that person. Like somebody pointing gun at you, right? Two things will happen. One is anger, second is fear, right? Fight or flight. And both are unwholesome emotions. How do you avoid both? By arousing loving kindness and compassion. So you can literally
tell that person, okay, you can shoot me.
No, first, that's not the,
I love you, that's not the thing.
What happens is, when you, as soon as somebody is holding a gun at your head, obviously it is not possible to arouse loving kindness, because that person is not lovable. You can love your child, your friend, your spouse, brother, sister. It's easy to arouse loving kindness for the near and dear ones. It's very difficult to arouse loving kindness for those who inflict pain.
Well, at the moment,
so what you do, what you do is you arouse compassion.
Well, not only that. I mean, like if somebody's pointing a gun at you, your primary emotion is survival. So you protect yourself. You call the police.
I don't think.
No, that's fear. That's fear.
You have to know yourself first and get out of the
danger. Well, yeah, you get out of the danger first.
That's fear. That's fear. So what you do... Sorry?
That person won't give you that much time to think about everything.
No, no. Right. First, you protect... I don't know. I think you protect yourself and call the police and get out of the way. And
take everything.
And if worse comes to worse, you shoot the person first. I mean, it's...
No, that's not compassion. Generally, what happens... generally, what happens... Not that either. What happens is, when there is compassion, loving kindness, and that's why in contemplation I give you that question, is really possible to love your enemy? And yes, if you are a step, you can arouse compassion. So when somebody is pointing gun at you, it's not possible to arouse loving kindness, then you arouse compassion. Oh, this person doesn't know what he's doing. He's suffering from ignorance. He's going to do bad karma. Bad karma is going to give rise to bad results. Or he's going to suffer. May he not suffer. The moment you start thinking like that, the moment you are plugged into compassion, number one thing, fear goes away. Whenever there is no fear, there is ultimate creativity. If you are not in fear, trust me, you will find out ways to not only get harm yourself, but also not harm the other person. Period.
Yes.
That's the power of compassion. It gives you that creativity, that thoughtfulness in that moment, because it eradicates fear. It makes you so creative. It brings such intuitiveness that you avoid harm to your own enemy and also to you, and you win the war for both parties. That's the beauty of compassion. And it can be understood only through experience, you know. It may sound like a fairy tale, you know.
Yeah, definitely. When your life is in danger, you need lots of experience to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
That was an extreme, really improbable effort. Yeah, it's still challenging, you know, if you...
Absolutely.
That to a lower degree where
it is challenging.
People are very irritating. And, you know,
absolutely.
It seems like the only purpose of their survival is to
harm you.
Yeah, be very difficult.
Yeah. So the only way to deal with those people is to look at them as somebody who is suffering from mental disease. For some reason, we are okay when somebody is, I mean, think about your neighbor, okay, who's just really a mean guy and just really jerk, and you just don't like him, okay? And then one day somebody comes and tells you that he's suffering from terminal cancer. I mean, he's really in terrible pain. Will your perspective about your neighbor change? I don't think you will feel angry towards him as much, right? A bit of compassion will arise in you because you will know that, oh, he's suffering, he's going to die, right? That's what compassion does. It takes away the highest degree of hatred.
Then you're going to say that he's not that bad.
Right. Same with our child, you know. When our child is healthy and he is screaming and yelling, we generally react. But the same child, when he's sick and screaming and yelling, do we react?
With compassion.
Because we see suffering in that child. So what is happening actually is there is this compassion arising in you. The same thing. When we have compassion towards others because we see them physically suffering, can we do the same for mental suffering? Right? A jerk is suffering mentally, right? A mean guy has mental disease.
He's probably not really mean to you, he's probably mean to everybody.
So right.
He's not really singling you out.
Not probably, most definitely. Because meanness is meanness, right? Anger is anger. So, and because we are spiritual aspirants, we are living among beings, we can't live without practicing loving kindness, compassion. You don't need these things if you are in Himalayas. Because you are not dealing with other people, right? You are just by yourself there. So.
Yeah, I have a question on that. I'll come back to it. But one of the obstacles I thought in arising love.
Sorry, you have to
say. Sorry, I'm
here. Are you living? Okay. Yes. All right.
Is that you know your feeling of self? You feel like, why me? You know, it's all about me. Why is he trying to harm me? I don't want to die. There's a gun here. I don't want to die. I want to live. It's about me. I want to stay on. There is that attachment. That's one of the obstacles too. So when you are in that mode, you are not going to feel compassionate at all. And you know, I should find a way to remove that attachment itself, so that...
That's delusion, and that's a very higher state of being. If you are established in non-delusion or egolessness, you don't need any of this.
Yeah.
You're already beyond
that's,
all
okay,
that.
Okay, that's where my question came. So, you know, why loving kindness?
Right. Because we are not established in non-delusion yet. We have not become egoless yet. We haven't perfected the mind yet.
So
right?
It's a tool towards achieving.
Exactly. Those are tools in your toolbox to facilitate. The ultimate goal is selflessness, egolessness. And these are the tools to facilitate that. And why? Because we are trying to become that while living among other beings and not living in a monastery or away from everything.
Yeah. So, In living in monastery or living alone, you will not need loving kindness.
I mean, you don't deal with other people, right? So you really don't need that.
So that's, you know, that's really my first question. You're asking me to create attachment. It's like, you know, you're dragging me down with loving kindness. Mm-hmm. But I understand the point that because we are all...
But loving kindness is not attachment. Attachment is the masked enemy of loving kindness, and that can be understood only through actually practicing loving kindness meditation. If you constantly practice developing goodwill and welfare for others constantly, like we did last time, and then expand it from you, from your spouse, children, neighbors, to the whole world, and then notice what happens to your mind, how it becomes more and more non-hateful, how it becomes more and more non-attached in the sense that it is gearing up towards non-delusion. That is the intrinsic nature of loving kindness.
Right. Yeah. I see the point. When you talk to her about loving the enemy also, I cannot think of any. I don't know if there is
any. Right.
But the thought of Jesus came to mind. Imagine that there, when he was being crucified,
right,
he was not thinking about himself. That's that gun.
Compassion.
Compassion.
What did he exactly? That's exactly what he said. Oh, these people don't know what they are doing.
Right.
Right? Please forgive them. Right? That is exactly what compassion is. Otherwise, it is hard to deal with crucifixion, you know? And that's why they say that loving kindness, compassion is actually practiced by divine beings. It's actually the moment-to-moment abiding quality of divine beings. Just like there are human beings, there are divine beings. You don't have to agree with it. But
it also strikes me with Gandhi. I was thinking about Gandhi, not Jesus, but with Gandhi, when you think about how, and this is popularized by the movies, I never really studied Gandhi, so I don't know how much of this is accurate, how much of this is distorted.
Right.
But the way he, for example, allowed Britain to be very violent towards the Indian citizenry, and he did all this through passive non-aggression, through resistance in a kind of loving and kind way, but non-aggressive resistance.
Absolutely.
And broke them down that way and caused them to retreat and exit from India.
Absolutely.
It strikes me as kind of this, what you're saying, with the loving kindness and the acceptance and understanding the suffering in others for what they're inflicting onto you.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. And those are the greatest warriors. You know, what kind of bravery it requires to shoot somebody? Not much, right? People talk about soldiers all the time, and quite honestly, I don't see there is much bravery in it. The amount of bravery it takes to face somebody with a gun and still not counterattack, that's called being a real warrior, like Gandhi, right? He faced the guns of the entire British Empire without ever shooting back and still won the war. Not for India, but for both parties. See, that's the beauty of loving kindness and compassion, is you win for both parties. It needs extreme amount of bravery to face somebody with a gun and still not have fever, and then try to win it for both of them. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It comes back to something you said as well, is it takes a lot of practice, because coming back to Satish's analogy as well, is I kind of view it as you take a shower when you're meditating, and you eventually dry out. The water is dried from you.
Right.
When you take less of an extreme, the gun is an extreme, as Vish was pointing out, but more day-to-day scenarios where people, for example, have ill will towards you, say, at work, or they're jealous, or they're frustrated with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get caught into that.
Right.
And to not show compassion and love, because what you develop during the practice, during the meditation and the yoga, tends to wear off.
Right.
And so it's a constant reinforcement, kind of a spiral that you've got to develop, where you can practice that constantly, and then maybe you stay wet for longer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Practice is everything, and that's why we have to constantly recollect the elements of love. You know, constantly, loving kindness, compassion, gladness, equanimity.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
There's also some, like, there's a certain amount of, there's also something about responsibility. Like, I'm thinking about, like, say, for instance, you're in the middle of a row, for instance, and everybody's, okay, say you're, like, you're seeing people starving, for instance, right? Well, if I have a lot of food, plenty for my family, it's easy for me to give it out. Okay, you're hungry here, and take, because I have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if I only have just enough, or barely enough for me and my kids, I feel I have that responsibility to them first. So I have to feed them first because they're my primary responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's, and then give to everybody else, you know, mm-hmm. or even tell them, okay, well, you just take half the banana because there's this other person here, knowing mm-hmm. that my child's going to be okay. But if my child's going to die, mm-hmm. it's going to be my child first. There's a sense of responsibility there too. I was mm-hmm. given that responsibility by the world, mm-hmm. and
right.
I can't just ignore it and feed the rest of the world first, knowing that my own are going to die. You know?
That's why loving kindness is practiced in a particular order, which we did last time. It begins with you, then to your nearest one, dearest one, then slowly. If you try to love your enemy directly, it will fatigue your consciousness. Never do that. You expand out your loving kindness, starting with you and then the nearest and dearest ones. Use compassion for enemies. And together, you can handle all life situations exquisitely. And your issue about attachment will go away when you study equanimity. Because when you combine loving kindness with equanimity, there is no place for attachment. And that's why it's the fourth element. And also another thing is, if you establish in tranquility, and then there is first level of mental absorption, then if you were in that level and were to contemplate on compassion, you wouldn't have had this question. So, you see what I'm saying? That's why, at least virtually, I took you there. It's a methodical way of going to that state and then contemplating. So, no matter how much I tell you, it really doesn't have as much value as you actually establishing yourself in the first level of mental absorption and then contemplating on loving kindness and compassion.
Yeah.
So.
When I was focused on my whole being
mm-hmm.
came to a point of vastness.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing there. And then, you know, there was this loving kindness. So I thought,
No, that's different. That's different. No, that's why I said concentration, not mindfulness. This practice was specifically related to concentration. That's why we were coming down here, reducing the area of focus. So you have to be, mental absorption is concentration, vastness is expansion. Both are necessary, but they are distinct practices, not different, distinct, and they both are needed. But in this, you have to have concentration first, mental absorption, and then train. But good questions and something that must be contemplated about.
So.
And you bet, yeah. And then when we talk about equanimity as the fourth element, then those questions, you know, will be answered. So, all right? Great. Thanks.